Yes.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You are listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. Excited to be here with you on this wonderful Thursday as it is now full speed ahead to week two between the Chiefs and the Bengals. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. We also will talk about the Kansas City Royals. I do think we have come to a conclusion about the playoffs regarding them. I'll tell you what that is coming up in a bit. We're going to take a trip out to Cincinnati. K-State fans, I told you guys yesterday that I apologize. We could not have a player on the show, but we will have Avery Johnson on the show next week if you guys win. So take care of business at home against Arizona. And we will have Avery Johnson on the show next week. If you missed it, we had Christian Williams from Missouri on the show yesterday. If you want to check the podcast page, you can get that there. We did not have a KU player on the show this week because KU did not win this week. If you guys do what you're supposed to do against UNLV, we are happy to have Devin Neal back on the show. We will catch up with him next week if the Kansas Jayhawks take care of business at home. Are you calling that at home? It's not at home, but it's at home.
It's more at home than in Las Vegas. So, yeah, that's home.
Okay, because it feels like, you know, how KU will play a team and they call it a neutral site, but you played Washington in December at Sprint Center. That's not a non-conference basketball game, but that's neither here nor there. So we are happy that you were here. Shout out to you if you were watching the show on Twitch, if you were watching the show on YouTube. We still care about you, even if you're listening to the show over on 610 AM. We would encourage you to come over to the FM side. Come on over to 96.5 The Fan. But you know what? It counts the same to me if you're listening on 96.5 FM or 610 AM. So you are perfectly fine to listen to it however you want to listen to it. We will get to the Chiefs coming up after Rob gives you a chance to win a pizza.
Pizza time on The Drive. Carrington, dial me up right now. Caller number 6, 913-586-7965. Caller number 6 wins a pizza from our friends over at Pizza Tasio. Pizza Tasio is Kansas City's best New York style pizza, and they've taken over the city. They got locations everywhere like Waldo, Belton, North KC, Overland Park, and Midtown. They also have a killer selection of craft and local beers, plus unique wines. So whether in the mood for a whole pie or just a slice or two is good enough for you, be sure to visit them now at PizzaTasio.com. That's pizza, TASCIO.com.
I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 96.5 The Fan. And number two, I need you to tell one friend. I don't need you to tell two friends that if you want some of the best pizza in Kansas City and you're also excited about college and pro football, the best place to do that is with us right here on 96.5 The Fan. So I saw a lot of pushback from you guys yesterday when I gave you my quick list. And the list was, these are who I currently think are the Chiefs' five biggest rivals. Let's start from five and let's go to one. Number five, the Las Vegas Raiders. Number four, the Los Angeles Chargers. Number three, the Buffalo Bills. Number two, the Baltimore Ravens. And number one, their biggest rival is the Cincinnati Bengals. We got a chance to catch up with the afternoon host in Cincinnati. We'll play that for you later on in the show. But this is how he started our conversation. He agrees with me.
I think it's become the best organic rivalry in the NFL, where, you know, it's not based on, you know, being division foes. It's not based on geography. It's not based on, you know, some sort of long-time history. It's based on a lot of really good games, a lot of really high-stakes games. And I think, as much as I don't think these two teams really like each other, I do think there's a ton of mutual respect. And so I don't care who you root for. I think if you're an NFL fan, you've had this one circled since the schedule came out.
So that is Mo Egger. He hosts afternoons in Cincinnati, and he believes that this is the most organic rivalry in the National Football League. I tell you guys this every year, that college rivalries are based on longstanding traditions, where NFL rivalries are based in competitiveness. If you are from my era, my generation of the NFL, every year you look forward to watching the Patriots play the Indianapolis Colts. Those two teams were not in the division, but you knew every single year that those two teams were going to be competing for a Super Bowl, and the winner of that game is going to have the inside track to being the one seed. You knew the importance of it. Didn't matter if that game was in week two. It didn't matter if that game was in week 13. You knew the importance of that game. I was talking to Cody in between breaks earlier in this week, and he said that his biggest takeaway from this game is you have a chance to eliminate the Cincinnati Bengals from the one seed conversation. You're going to have a two-game lead on them plus the tiebreaker. I don't see a scenario that Cincinnati then wins 13 games and Kansas City only wins 12. So I know it's early to be having that conversation, and we're not going to dive fully into that conversation. But if you were talking about January, which is all it really matters for this team, you got a chance to deliver a mighty blow to one of your biggest competitors, and in my opinion, your biggest rival in the AFC. And a major reason of why I think this is, boy, these two teams like to talk. The Chiefs, for the most part, they've only really talked in one of these matchups. Now, you guys remember, you know, Justin Reed was firing back and forth. Both sides were doing a lot of yapping. For the most part, it is their side that does a lot of the talking. Remember how I told you guys last week that I think the Baltimore Ravens, they try to big homie the Chiefs. They try to be more physical, big, bad. They try to do that to Kansas City. It's like Cincinnati tries to draw Kansas City in with the bulletin board material and talking tough and tries to psych them out and get inside their head. If you don't believe me, this is what their number one corner said earlier today about Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy, who has been on the team for about 19 minutes, he's already receiving trash talk from the Cincinnati Bengals. That's how I know you're a real threat. You're a real member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Here is Cameron Tyler Britt. He was asked a question about how you stop Xavier Worthy, who had two touchdowns, one of the better performances from a rookie in week one. Here's what he said.
That's about it. He can run straight. Run jet sweeps and just run straight. We can't do too much else, so that's about it. I feel like you put your hands on him, he's only 100-some pounds. So if you put hands on him, you'll stop the speed. So basically, get hands on him.
They're already doing the yapping. You're too small. You're a gimmick. That's what he called Xavier Worthy. He didn't use those words, but if you say you're a 5'10", 155-pound, soaking wet, all you can do is run straight, all you can do is jet sweeps, you can't do anything else, he called you a gadget player. He called you a gimmick. You dominated at the University of Texas. You were a first-round pick in the National Football League. You scored two times in your first game. You only touched the ball three times, and that man has the audacity, the unmitigated gall, to call you a gadget player and say all you can do is run fast. This wasn't the first time that they've been yapping. They've been yapping like this for years. You guys remember this, and this one came back to bite them in the rump.
Good afternoon, Cincinnati. I have a proclamation from the desk of the mayor. Be it proclaimed, whereas the Cincinnati Bengals are headed to Burrowhead Stadium for their second consecutive AFC Championship game. Whereas at last year's game, the Bengals scored more points than the Chiefs, resulting in a Bengals victory and a Chiefs loss. Whereas Joseph Lee Burrow, who's 3-0 against Mahomes, has been asked by officials to take a paternity test confirming whether or not he's his father. Whereas all season long, Cincinnati has been on a path of destiny, fighting it out to overcome anyone who stands between them and a Super Bowl win. And whereas Kansas City is named after its neighboring state, which is, you know, just kind of weird. Now therefore, I, Aftab Pierval, mayor of the city of Cincinnati, do hereby proclaim January 29th, 2023, as They Gotta Play Us Day in Cincinnati. Thank you.
That was the mayor of Cincinnati, and you guys know the Chiefs won that game. And trust me, they heard all of that, and everybody was firing back. It didn't matter if it was Travis Kelce. It didn't matter if it was Chris Jones. The Chiefs took this as a sign of disrespect. At some point in this season, we are going to have a conversation about the Chiefs playing down to the level of their competition. That game feels like Tampa Bay. That game feels like New Orleans. Maybe it happens next week on Sunday Night Football against the Atlanta Falcons. The Chiefs just come out there. They got C+, C- energy. They just don't bring it in the first half of the game, and they got to cobble a win together. If there is a team that you know is going to get the focus of the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that is going to get the absolute best version that the Week 2 Kansas City Chiefs can give you, it is the team that said this.
We'll see y'all in Burrowhead.
Yeah, baby.
Let that sink in your mind. We'll see y'all in Burrowhead.
I think this is the best game on the slate for this week in the National Football League. There might be two 1-0 teams and some surprise teams. Sunday Night Football should be fun this week. Get a chance to see C.J. Stroud up against Caleb Williams. Monday Night Football has the Falcons and the Eagles going up against each other. Two teams that had some preseason hype and some preseason buzz. You were talking about two teams that love to go back and forth, two teams that don't like each other, and a Kansas City Chiefs team that is coming into this pretty healthy, a Cincinnati team that is pretty banged up, and a Cincinnati team that got embarrassed in week one. If there is a thing that can happen to kind of refocus you and get you back on track, it is losing at home to the New England Patriots and having the worst loss in week one. And now you got to go on the road. You got to lock in and you got to figure out a way to avoid going to 0-2 and beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I know what the spread says, and I think the spread is fair. Kansas City should be a 6.5-point favorite in this game. We have seen far too many Chiefs and Bengals games for me to completely dismiss the Cincinnati Bengals and think that the point spread matters in this thing. This is going to be a one possession. This is going to be a tight ball game late. These two teams, that's all they know, is playing tightly contested ball games. I'm going to trust the Chiefs to be the more disciplined team in this matchup. They had 12 penalties, Cincinnati did, against the New England Patriots. They only scored 10 points. They had two fumbles in that game. I'm not sure if they can play a clean enough game to go on the road and beat a team like Kansas City. We'll bounce back and forth between football and baseball over the course of the show. I do want to continue to talk football coming up on the other side. We got a big Thursday night football game between the Bills and the Dolphins. You guys know my stance on Miami. They're fraudulent. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5. The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
All right, welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fam. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful Thursday. All right, let's talk a little bit of football. I gave you guys the analogy last year that I believe the Miami Dolphins, they are a team that only beats up on small schools. They're the 4A school that only beats up on the class 1A and 2A schools. But when they got to play Blue Valley Northwest, when they got to play the big dogs, they usually get smoked. So tonight, they are on Thursday Night Football. They're a small favorite in this game, which blows my mind, but okay. Can I read to you guys the last 10 quarterbacks that the Miami Dolphins have beaten? This is the list. Mac Jones, Russell Wilson, Daniel Jones, Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Aiden O'Connell, Zach Wilson, Dak Prescott, Trevor Lawrence. Now, Dak Prescott is good. Dak Prescott is a top 10 quarterback in the league. I'm not sure if any of those other guys are. It's debatable on Trevor Lawrence. He's a 50-50, but you guys know how I feel about Trevor Lawrence. You think they're beating Josh Allen tonight? He's healthy, right? He's playing in this. Full complement of weapons. They just scored 36 points on Sunday. They're the favorites? Okay. I do not understand it with Miami. I don't get it. I don't see what the rest of you guys see when it comes to Miami. This team has not convinced me. They have not shown me that this is a game that they are going to win. I might end up looking foolish on this, but I do know Josh Allen is 11-4 against the Miami Dolphins in his career, and they have dominated Tua. Tua is 1-6 against Josh Allen. So if you were telling me, hey, Tua, you deserve this contract, you got all the weapons in the world, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Jalen Waddle, your head coach just got a new extension, you got some weapons in the run game, this is a home game that you are supposed to win if you're that guy. But I got severe hesitations and reservations about that Miami Dolphins team. And the only way that you can answer those questions to me is to win these kind of games. Short week, at home, Thursday night football. You've had distractions this week. Every time I turn up, your wide receiver is talking about himself like he's Nelson Mandela, like he's Meek Mill, like he was wrongly imprisoned. Every day this week, I've heard from Tyreek Hill on this issue. He's writing letters to the police force and the union, and it just feels like a distracted week that if you don't have strong leadership and a strong culture, that can be the difference in you coming out and laying an egg. So I am off the Miami Dolphins for tonight. I think Buffalo wins this game. I don't need to worry about the points because I'm taking the Bills straight up in this game. I think the Bills go on the road, and I think they beat the Dolphins tonight. The Dolphins got to prove to me, A, they can beat Buffalo. A, they can beat a team that we think can win the Super Bowl. And if you were telling me over their last 12 wins, their best win is in December against the Dallas Cowboys, that's not a good win.
I think two things are at play here, though. I think everything you're saying about the Dolphins is fair, but we both know, Carrington, you know when the Dolphins are at their absolute best? September and October. It seems like every season the Dolphins come out the gate red hot.
Yeah, last year they'd be playing bums. That's why they come out the gate red hot, because they'd be playing bums early on in the season.
I think you did a little fun with endpoints. I don't disagree with your point on Tua, but it was 2 years ago in September in Miami. The Dolphins beat Josh Allen. Remember the game where the video flashed to then offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey and he was banging this stuff?
We got to go to 2 years ago wins for them. That's what we got to go to. We got to go to 2 years ago wins.
September is when they're at their best. It's hot. They're in Miami. The league hasn't adjusted to their super speed yet, and they come out the gate hot. They are every year 5-0 and ending 9-8. That's just what they do. They did it the first year under McDaniel. They did it the second year under McDaniel, and I'm betting it happens again this year. I'm with you. I'm on the Bills. We have a little office pool. I have the Bills plus the points tonight. It seems like the safest bet on the board, but the Dolphins are a dangerous team when the games don't matter. When we haven't had the leaves change yet, the Dolphins are a threat, and the leaves haven't changed yet. So the Dolphins are, in fact, viable against teams that are just okay in September. And also, all offseason, you told me you were out on the Bills. So,
but you're right. I am out on the Bills. You know who I've been even more out on. I've been more out on the Jets. You have to give me that. I've never wavered in my dislike for the Jets, and I've never wavered on my dislike of the Miami Dolphins. You tell me that they were good before the leaves change. Last year, in September, they beat the Chargers, non-playoff team last year, fired their coach. They beat the New England Patriots. Fired their head coach, fired their quarterback. They beat the Denver Broncos 70-20. They tried to fire their quarterback in the middle of the season. They then played Buffalo in October. Take a guess how that game went. Buffalo beat them 48-20. You want to know why Miami had to go on the road and play in that Arctic blast last year, which was Arrowhead? They had a home game against the Baltimore Ravens. They lost 56-19. They then had, remember, it was Sunday night football, Bills, Dolphins. If you win the division. They lost 21-14 at home to the Buffalo Bills. And no, I'm not picking Miami to win this game. They have given me no reason to believe that they are going to win this game. I'm staying as far away from the Miami Dolphins as possible. Maybe you guys will laugh at me tomorrow and say, ha ha, Carrington, I tried to tell you. If you were telling me that Tua has played one team seven times and the other team has won six, You can be on the side of the one if you want to. I'm over here comfortable on the six. I'm very, very comfortable in my position that tonight on Amazon, I'm going to see the Buffalo Bills continue to show you, even in a year that we think is a transition year, they still have the best coach in that division. They still have the best quarterback in that division. They still have the best culture in that division. And when you have all three of those things line up together, you are probably going to win these what feel like 50-50 games against the Miami Dolphins. I am a non-believer. I am not on board. Another team, Rob, that I'm a non-believer on is the Baltimore Orioles. I have seen enough Royals baseball. I don't need to watch any more Royals baseball in the regular season. I can already tell you how I want the remainder of these next, what, they got 13, 14 games left? I don't need to see anymore. They're not winning the division. This is not me being negative. This is just me playing the math and the odds, and you guys know I try to side with that. They're not winning the division. I know that. You know that, and that's fine. They are 4.5 games back, and we have played way too many games for me to think that they are winning the division. They ain't winning the division. Now it is about the wild card and who you line up against. We have seen them play almost all of the competitive teams over the course of the last 30 days, have we not? That was the point of the riptide. You played Minnesota. You played the Yankees. You played Houston. You played Cleveland. All of the teams that you thought you were going to see in October, we have seen. I don't need to see any more data points. I don't need to see any more information to tell you I know exactly who I want the Royals to play. I want the Royals to play the Orioles. If they're not going to win the division and they're not going to be the home team in these games, I have zero fear of going on the road and playing the Orioles. I don't think the Royals are going on the road and beating the Houston Astros. I don't believe that the Royals are going to Yankee Stadium and winning 2 out of 3. You know the team that I do feel very confident that they can go on the road and beat? I feel very confident in their ability to go on the road and beat the Baltimore Orioles. We were just talking about the Miami Dolphins, a team that you think was really good in the first half of the season but fades in the second half of the season. You want to know who the Baltimore Orioles remind me of? They remind me of last year's Philadelphia Eagles. Did you know that the Orioles, they were 17-9 in April, they were 17-9 in May, they were 17-12 in June. The Orioles were fantastic the first part of the season. They were 58-38 in the first half of the year. Did you know that they are 25-26 in the second half of the season? They have had a losing month in July, in August, and they are currently .500 in the month of September. I don't think that team is playing well. And if you're telling me in a very random three-game series, it's not a seven-game series, it is a sprint to who can win two of these next three games. The Royals' arrow is trending upward. I don't think that's what's happening with the Baltimore Orioles. Sure, it's a three-game series. You'll take your chances against anybody. If you get the Yankees, you got to go to Yankee Stadium and you got to figure it out. And you starting pitching-wise, you give yourself an opportunity. You give yourself an opportunity against Houston. But the same way in the NFL, we talk about the difference between being a Super Bowl team and a playoff-contending team. I look at the Yankees and the Astros as a World Series team. I look at the Orioles as a team that's just going to make the postseason. The Royals match up really good against teams, and they've done so all season, against teams that we think are going to just make the playoffs. They have not matched up great against those other teams. If I could pick right now, I want to press the button, give me the Baltimore Orioles. The Royals will beat them.
I would think if you're a Royals fan, now you can't control it. You're not going to be like, hey, win this many games, you're going to get the Orioles. Like, you can't control what you can't control. But if you can get the Orioles, if you're a Royals fan, you got to feel a level of excitement in that wild card round. Because in the riptide, I saw the Royals take on the Astros. It was really bad. It was a four-game series in Houston, and not a single game in the series was Kansas City competitive. Now, I know Vinny got hurt in the first game, and morale, yada, yada, yada. Four games in Houston, smoked every time. I don't want to see Houston. I actually think Houston's doing what Houston does every year. They're rounding into ALCS form.
100%.
So let's run and hide from that team. Also in the riptide, so this is like a very recent thing. I saw the Royals play the Yankees. They played great in game one. They were, you know, fighting tooth and nail in game three, camp a little short. You know, they lost the series, though. I saw the Yankees do a similar thing to the Royals in Kauffman. Couple close games, the Yankees won. One game, the Yankees dominated. The Royals did steal one at Kauffman Stadium. I think if the Royals played the Yankees in the playoffs, it might go all three games. But I feel like the Yankees would get the better of the Royals. So I'm standing there right with you. Sign me up. Let's go to Baltimore. Let's see what that pitching can do against that offense. Let's see what a team that has disappointed their fan base, what their energy is. If you're an Oriole fan and you felt like, man, we are World Series bound back in April, Jeff Passan before the season said they're the undisputed best team in baseball. And now they're fighting for a wild card spot and they might be playing in the wild card round. Let's see how their fan base reacts. Let's see how they react if you steal a game. Yes, please. I want to play Baltimore. No, under no circumstances do I want Houston. Whatever it takes to avoid Houston. If you have to lose the entire Braves series in 2 weeks, cool. Don't play Houston.
You know that we love a good cross-sport comparison on this show. I'm going to give you one that I actually think is very complimentary towards one of your favorite teams. You know who Houston is? They're Kansas. They're the three seed with the pedigree. I don't want to see them in the NCAA tournament. They're not the one seed or the two seed this year, but it's Kansas. Let's just not play them. Let's wait to play them to the Elite Eight. I don't want any parts. You know who the Orioles are? They're the six or the seven seed that started out the year in the preseason top 10, but they were just okay in conference play. But you still got to put them in the NCAA tournament, and they're that 6-11 or that 7-10 matchup that you can't wait to write against them in the first round of the NCAA tournament on your bracket. That's what the difference in these two teams are. I'm not saying it is impossible to beat the Houston Astros, but if I look at them over the last 7 years, and I look at what the Royals have been over the last 7 years, and I look at the series that these two teams just played a couple of weeks ago, yeah, I don't want nothing to do with that team. If you were telling me the Orioles, who last year were arguably the best team in the American League and completely squandered that opportunity, and now in the second half of the season they appear to be doing the exact same thing, I don't want any parts of them. The Yankees are on a different level. The Astros are on a different level. I wouldn't say that Cleveland is, but you're not going to play Cleveland in the first round. You got a chance to play Baltimore. You got a chance to either be hosting Baltimore or going to Baltimore. That is the Royals' best chance to make the postseason. Make the ALDS, because making the wild card is making the postseason. That is their best chance to make the ALDS. And then once you get in a best of five, best of seven, the odds change a little bit. You can get Lugo to pitch twice in the series. You can get Reagans to pitch twice in the series. You really give yourself then a puncher's chance of winning that series. But if they got a three-game set in Yankee Stadium or a three-game set against the Astros, I think they could get swept.
You mentioned it there, and it's the top text on our text line. Guys, the Royals can still be the top wild card, and Baltimore could be coming to Kansas City. What does that mean? Maybe this is – I've been very positive with the Royals all year. I mean, it's the first time I've been negative about the team all season. I don't think the Royals are catching up. The Orioles have a 4.5-game lead, I believe, on the Royals. The Royals aren't making up 4.5 games in 15 games. They're just not. I know the Orioles are playing bad, and the Orioles are wounded, and the Orioles are bleeding, and the Orioles are the team you want in the first round. But the same way the Royals collapsing and falling out of the playoffs would be catastrophic and historic, it's near the same. There's, 15 or 16 games left, depending on what team you are, off days, so on and so forth. To lose 4.5 games in that window would be pretty historical. So I think the Royals are kind of either going to be the 2 or the 3 in the wild card, and then it's just a matter of who you're matching up with. Now, maybe I'm going to look like an idiot for saying that, and the top texture will be right, and the Orioles keep taking on water, and the Royals do jump in the wild card, but 4.5 in 15 games, something I'm not really entertaining at this notion.
You know how I know things are going really, really poorly for the Orioles? I want to play for you. This is audio. This is Dean Kramer. Is that how you pronounce his last name? Dean Kramer? Whenever your starting pitcher is talking like this in the final 3 weeks of the season, you guys got problems.
I wish that was my job to tell you, but that's not my job. My job is to go out there and pitch. That's a question for the higher-ups, you know, the guys who make the decisions of who plays, who doesn't play, and all that stuff. So I wish I could tell you, but I've got no answer for that.
Yeah, I'm telling you guys, when you start to have that conversation, when the question is how can you guys pull together down the stretch, you guys got problems, man. You got legitimate serious problems going on with the Baltimore Orioles. I'm telling you right now, if I could press the button, if I could spin the wheel, if I could 100% dictate who the Royals play in the first round of the postseason, it seems very, very obvious to me which team you would pick. You would take the Baltimore Orioles. The Royals are currently better than them. They are. They are better than they are. That matters in the postseason. I think they're better than them, and I think they also have the pitching advantage in that series. You will take that every single time. I want to play this audio cut for you guys. Danny Hughes was on Fesco in the Morning earlier today, and he was asked if this game feels and will play like a divisional game. Here's what Danny Hughes had to say.
Absolutely. I feel like this is the new rivalry. You think back to Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. They were not in the same division, and they still had that kind of heated rivalry. You add in some of the trash talk, and obviously the team that's had the most success against Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback that's had the most success against Patrick Mahomes outside of Tom Brady. Like, there's a lot of levels to this that make it more of a rivalry against a non-division opponent than maybe we've seen here in Kansas City in a long time. So, like, that's where we're at. The guys understand it. The organization understands it, and they'll be ready.
I think that plays what Dana just talked about. I think that plays a little bit better for Cincinnati in this than I think it plays for the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs aren't treating this like a division game. I think the Chiefs are treating this like the Chiefs are an organization that we know. They listen and pay attention to what the other teams are saying about them. We got a chance to see a glimpse of that on the television show, The Quarterback. Mahomes is talking to his friend, and he says, we match up better against Buffalo, but we want to play Cincinnati because of all the talking they've been doing. I don't think it takes much to get Patrick riled up. I don't think it takes much for him to communicate to his team about how he feels about this team. I think that part of what Dana talks about is a lot more important for Cincinnati in this game. They already know that they have a really, really tough division where you got Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland. You just got a lot of tough, physical kind of teams. Cincinnati has already given up one of the games that you would consider to be their gimme game. This was a month where they were supposed to go at least 3-1. If you got New England, Washington, and Carolina in three of your first four games, you're supposed to get off to a hot start. They scored 10 points in that first game. They didn't really do a lot offensively in that game against the New England Patriots. Joe Burrow threw for less than 175 yards. Zach Moss, who's now their number one running back, he ran for 44 yards in the game. Ja'Marr Chase had 62 yards receiving. No one else on their team had more than 30 yards receiving on the team. This is an offense right now that if you were looking for as a defense, and the Chiefs have played well defensively over the last year and a half, this is the perfect time to be playing Cincinnati. This is an offense that still can't protect its quarterback. This is a quarterback who doesn't appear to be 100% healthy. This is a team that cannot run the football effectively, and a team right now that only has one proven offense. I would argue right now that Cincinnati's offense, they have fewer weapons than what the Chiefs had last year at this time. If you don't have a healthy T. Higgins and you no longer have Tyler Boyd as that legitimate number three pass catching option, this offense is bad. Tell me where the offense is going to come from. Ja'Marr Chase and who? Based on what we've seen the Chiefs do defensively, there's no reason to think that Zach Moss is running all over this team. They got a Tanner Hudson, a Mike Gesicki, Chase Brown, Trenton Irwin. That's a bad football team. This defense has earned the respect that Cincinnati is not coming in here, and they're not throwing for 300 yards and scoring 27 points. This game is not going to be a shootout. I could see it being a blowout because of Kansas City, but if Kansas City plays a clean, mistake-free game, I just don't think Cincinnati is at a point right now where they should be able to keep up with Kansas City based on what we saw from these two teams last week. Kansas City looks like a team that I don't want to say firing on all cylinders because you don't have everybody, but they're like an offense that can put up 30 points. I don't trust Cincinnati to put up 30 points right now. I just don't know with what weapons they're doing that up against with one of the five best defenses in the National Football League. Coming up on the other side, we'll be joined by John Kurtz. We're going to take a couple of minutes to learn more about the Wildcats as they get ready for their game against the Wildcats. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Let's take a trip out to Manhattan, Kansas to be joined by John Kurtz. He covers the Wildcats. John, how are you doing today, my man? I would like to tell you that we tried to get a K-State player on the show this week. We could not get one, so we called you instead.
Well, you know, it's a short week for them. They've got a lot going on, so I'm happy to take one for the team and do my part for Chris Klieman and the boys to help K-State get a win on Friday.
I can't believe that Avery Johnson is too busy to come on this show. If I was Pat McAfee, he would make time for me. If I was Dan Patrick, he would make time for me.
Well, the problem is
they're apparently
I wasn't even going there. I was going to say they're adopting the your Mizzou Tiger strategy of just, you know, we'll hoard the good players. We're not going to give you the good players. We'll let you talk to everybody else.
Well, they did tell us that we will get Avery Johnson if they win this weekend. So I'm pulling for them so we could talk to Avery Johnson for the first time this season. All right, Kurtz, let's start with this question here, man. When was the last time, or I guess, this is the biggest K-State non-conference game in Manhattan since when?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty easy answer because it's the first top 20 matchup at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. So the first time both teams have been ranked in the top 20 since the 2014 Auburn game. And I think that really is a good comp and a good jumping off point there because that game was on a Thursday night. It was one that got a lot of hype during the offseason because that was the year after Auburn had played for the national championship when they lost to Jameis in Florida State. So they were red hot and everybody really was looking forward to that game. And it was an incredible atmosphere. I think like Snyder 2.0 and on, that definitely challenges for the best atmosphere that we've seen for a K-State game. And of all things, if not for a Tyler Lockett drop in the end zone that turned into an interception, K-State would have won that game. But this is very similar, right? Arizona had a great season last year, won 10 games, beat Oklahoma in their bowl game. They actually have the longest winning streak in college football right now. They've won 9 straight games. So they're coming in with a lot of hype, and K-State fans on a Friday night on Fox with the nation watching should do a pretty good TV number. And it's during a week where there's just not a lot of great games on paper. So I think it draws more attention probably because of that than it would if it were a little bit more lost in the shuffle. So I think the stage is set for a really awesome atmosphere tomorrow.
I saw some people kind of poking at K-State because this game was close against Tulane in the fourth quarter. I think that's disrespectful to Tulane and what they've been able to accomplish over the last couple of years. I thought it was a good, hard-fought win for K-State. What was your biggest takeaway from K-State on Saturday in New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, it's good to get out of there with a win. I think a bunch of different things are true here. It's very good for them to get out with a win and be tested and pushed like that early in the year. It is also a fact that the defense was pretty dreadful, and giving up 342 passing yards to a redshirt freshman quarterback is concerning. The part with that that's interesting is that the guys were completely wide open, like high school wide open. Mario Williams, former five-star recruits, like running with nobody within 10 yards of him. And that's because there were coverage busts in zone. I mean, it's not like they were just getting beaten in man. Phil Steele ranked that as the best secondary in the Big 12. They were just making mental mistakes. So they're pretty old veteran guys back there. So that was perplexing and definitely concerning, but at least it feels more fixable than like, hey, you just don't have the dudes and they're getting beaten one-on-one on the outside. But yes, the other thing that is true is that Tulane has won 23 games the last 2 years, and there are smart people in college football who think they may be actually upgraded at head coach. Not that Willie Fritz is not a great head coach, because he is, but John Summerall, who had been at Troy and had won a ton of games at Troy, a lot of people think very, very highly of him as well. So that's a good Tulane program that has a lot of really good players on the roster that are high-profile transfers. So I think a lot of reason to believe that that's going to be a win that looks better at the end of the year than it probably does to some people right now.
I thought Chris Klieman gave one of the best answers that I've heard him give when he talked about the offense and getting Dylan Edwards involved, and just mentioned that they just haven't run a lot of plays over the first two games of the season. You're going to need to really score to keep up with Arizona. They got one of the better quarterback wide receiver combinations in the country. Do you think this offense is ready to win a 45-41 shootout against Arizona?
It's a good question. You know, I had somebody kind of frame the question to me earlier this week, like if somebody takes away the run game, which is obviously the strength of this offense, is K-State and Avery Johnson, more importantly, good enough right now to throw them to a win? And I thought, well, it's a fair question because he has been really inconsistent. He's made some spectacular throws. He had a handful of them in the Tulane game, particularly the first touchdown pass that he threw. But then he also missed a couple of wide open balls down the field that one would have been a touchdown for sure to Sterling Lockett. Another one to Jaden Jackson would have been a big gain. So he's just more raw and needs some reining in. You know, I think with especially throwing from the pocket, like he's been so much better on the run. When you get him out making plays on the run, he's really better almost off platform than he is in the pocket right now. So they probably need to get more creative. I would say that, yes, it's a great point. They have not had a chance to run many plays. The ones on offense only ran basically 40 plays in week one against UT Martin. And then they were still under 60 last week against Tulane. And part of that is because they're feast or famine right now. They're either going three and out or they're scoring. And so there haven't been many like long sustained drives in there. But I do think they've probably also been holding back. You haven't seen a lot of design quarterback run with Avery Johnson yet. And I think that is something that once they incorporate more of it, you obviously don't want to do too much. But in a game like this, if it is going to be one of those shootouts and you need to keep scoring, I think you will probably see more of that. And in the second half of the Tulane game, I thought we actually did see a lot of really good things out of the offense. And so if they can just avoid the slow start, I mean, I'm certainly confident that the offense is going to come around. There are pieces there. Obviously, Avery Johnson has displayed the talent that he has, even if he's not as consistent as maybe some would have hoped at this point of the year. So very fair to raise it as a question. Can they do that? And that's why I really, T-Dot, I think the game is going to come down to K-State's defense. Like, to me, the bigger question mark is the defense. I knew the offense was going to take some time with a new OC, a new offensive line, a new starting quarterback to get in sync. But you felt like this defense could be one of the best in the league and they'd have to lean on him. I think it's going to come down to how much they can limit and neutralize Teteroa McMillan.
That is our guy, John Kurtz, joining us on the show today, taking a couple minutes to talk about what I think could be the best game of the weekend. This is not a great slate in college football. This is the game that would have been up for College Game Day if this game had been played on a Saturday, but it is on a Friday, so you have to watch it on Fox coming up tomorrow. Kurtz, I appreciate you.
No love for Mizzou, Boston College, best game of the week.
I actually think this game's better than Missouri, Boston College.
Well, I think Trayshawn Ward's going to run all over your Tigers, so we'll see.
All right, bye, Kurtz. I'm not. Why was that? We have Kurtz on. We show Kurtz love, and now he's going to throw a rock? He's going to throw a stone at the Tigers? That was uncalled for. Nothing but compliments for K-State. Nothing. I think this is the best game of the weekend. I don't think this is a great weekend slate. I think you've got two fun offenses. It's going to be a great environment. It's Friday night under the lights. I think this is the best game of the weekend. Alabama-Wisconsin would maybe be good if it was 2013. I'm not really sure how good it's going to be in this one. You know it's bad when Tulane-Oklahoma is one of the better games of the weekend. I'm not really sure how good LSU and South Carolina is going to be. There's not a great game at night this week. The best night game is Georgia-Kentucky. This is a – you can miss this weekend of college football. You watch tomorrow. You're going to have K-State, KU play at the same time. Missouri plays in that early window. But tomorrow night, you can go take your lady to go out to a nice dinner. Take Hodor Poropos or something. You don't got to sit and watch college football all day on Saturday. It's not great.
I mean, it does sting for K-State because I agree with you. I think it would have gotten game day if it hadn't been set to Fox Friday night. And I get why Fox and I get why K-State and all the powers that be wanted the standalone. We're on Fox Friday night under the big lights. I get it. But, man, if you had turned down the Friday night, you're probably the marquee game on Fox or on ESPN on Saturday night with game day. I mean, it's you know, a good problem to have, but this is the best game of the weekend. I'm not going to throw shade at Boston College, Missouri. I think Missouri's going to just wash Boston College. This game will be competitive the entire way.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Rob and I have a draft, but a different kind of draft. I'll explain the rules to you next. Keep it right here. It's the draft.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.